Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Ryan Tansom, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here, Ryan. Ryan Tansom helped turn around his family's business and then sold it for eight figures. Since then, Ryan founded Arcona to teach business owners how to grow the value of their business with the end in mind through educational workshops, fractional CFO services, and strategic planning. In addition to Arcona, Ryan is a sought-after speaker and host of the popular podcast called Intentional Growth. With more than 230 episodes, Ryan has interviewed business leaders throughout the world like Jack Stack, Gino Wickman, and the editor of Inc. Magazine and the Harvard Business Review. So Ryan, welcome. Welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Like I said, Mark, it's fun being on the other side. We'll see how it goes.
Intentional growth, value with end in mind. These are topics that not too many architects, when they're launching their firms, typically think about. So that's where I want to go today. I want to talk about value and how do we grow our firms and how do we grow the value of those firms. But before we do that, I want to dive deeper into your story. I want to hear your story. I want to hear about this eight-figure transformation. So go back to the beginning. Go back to how this all started. Share your story from where you discovered your passion to where you are today.
Absolutely, Mark. And just as a note for all your listeners, this is going to be applicable for every kind of business. So yes, we got architects that are tuning in. They're going to hear me say copy your business, and then they're going to don't hit end, right? This is this is going to be applicable for the listeners for sure. So the short version of my dad and I's story, my dad started our family business in the 90s, back when copiers were actually technology, Mark. and, you know, I can just picture all the CAD drawings and all that stuff. This is before all that stuff got digitized. And so he grew up from the zero to 21 million, 115 employees. I got involved in the business around the financial crisis, where the margins dropped out of the equipment, and everybody got hit differently. I know you're the industry that you're in very much so in the 08, 09. We had essentially a 5-6 year turnaround from there. So people, processes, new branding, built out the managed IT services. I was the executive VP in my mid 20s by the time we ended up selling. Essentially, where the challenges came, Mark, is my dad and I wanted different things. Different partners, different ages. He wanted to take more distributions. I wanted to reinvest. And it's the same cash flow, right? And so we're trying to figure out, how do we fix all this stuff? We've got CPAs coming in and bankers and attorneys and investment bankers. And all their strategies were really cool or really made a lot of sense in that vacuum. But then we'd walk back and we go, what does that mean to us? Yeah. And we still couldn't figure out how to clarify that path for Corey Tansom, Ryan Tansom, for us both of what we want, as well as us financially. So we, you know, just super trapped, you know, feeling like every year you'd wake up in less progress, right? Like I want to be further to my dream. So we made a rash decision and sold the business because that was our way out. That eight figures, you pay taxes on that, you pay down your debt. Doesn't necessarily mean eight figures goes into your pocket. So that was back in 2014. And I just, since then, Mark, I was like, what the heck happened? I was running a $20 million business in my 20s. Now I'm sitting in a cube next to an intern. I fired 55 of my 85 employees. What is going on and what could have been done differently? So that kind of started the entire journey. And as we get into this, what I realized, had we understood what created value and what was valuable in a business, we would have just been more intentional to focus on creating more value. And then we would have understood our choices and had an understanding and a framework to make decisions. So that started the podcast, started Arcona, and kind of the rest is history, and we can dive into that.
Yeah, I could imagine that that business is a very difficult business to have been in at the moment that you entered the business. That this is a, you know, a company that at one time was tech, right? That was the tech company, right? It was copy machines and those kind of things, fax machines. And there was a time where every business had a copy machine and it was leased, and that was, you know, a really good business. And then the world changes as it does, right? The internet shows up and scanning happens and email happens and the demand for what you were doing changed. And on top of that, the economy shifted dramatically. And so what were some of the things that you did when that happened? When you saw that the world was changing around you, the business environment generally was changing, but your industry was shifting. How do you take it into those 5 years of recovery? What do you do?
It's a good question, Mark. And I think what's really interesting is I think a lot of us entrepreneurs and business owners make it more complicated than it needs to be, because all those things change, like you said, but guess what? Our customers' needs never changed. Like, they need to wake up. I mean, we had a bunch of architects as clients, right? You need to wake up, you need to do your drawings, you need to communicate with your clients, you need to make more money, and you need to make sure you can go home and everything's good. And the technology was copiers to double your productivity with duplicating, right? But like, then it became email and software and all that stuff. So the needs were expanding, but the problem was still the same. And so we evolved, you know, we built out the managed IT services. We were doing everything for the Minnesota Wild. So like, hosting, people on site, copy center, data center, like software automation. I mean, the whole works, so that the Minnesota Wild could get on the rink, go to the Stanley Cup and win the championship, right? Like the problems were the same. It just wasn't paper. And so, you know, and we can talk about how businesses evolve, which also creates more value. And I'll maybe kind of drop a seed here, is the more sustainable, predictable, and transferable your cash flow is, the more your company's worth. Period. End of story.
So say that again. Sustainable, predictable,
and transferable. I don't care if you're a law firm, architect, if you're a CPA, if you're a SaaS business, or if you're a pharmaceutical business, the more sustainable, predictable, transferable your cash flow is, the more it's worth. So you could either, like Blockbuster, ride that investment right into the ground as they only optimize for late fees. Or guess what? The users never wanted anything different. They still wanted to watch TV.
Right.
Right. Same.
Yeah, exactly. So we're talking to thousands of small firm architects. Many of them are business owners. The majority of them are business owners. They started their firms because they wanted to make a difference in the world as architects. Many of us architects don't start architecture firms because we want to start a business. But we need to, right? We are running businesses. We need to look at the way businesses are structured and think about how, at the end, what do we do with that business? So how do we maximize the value of our life's work as architecture firm owners?
I think one of the biggest concepts that if people walk away with, other than the sustainable, predictable, transferable cash flow, as Mark, is it's the shift in mindset away from annual income to solving from annual income to understanding long-term value. And what I mean by that, So again, this is applicable to any business, more even more specifically to service-based businesses, which, by the way, I have. So I have the same problems that your audience does from Arcona's perspective. But if you're solving, what is the definition of solving for annual income? That is, if I'm a $1.5 million revenue firm, like, you have a salary because you're doing work for clients, right? So you're actually providing goods and services inside that business, but you're also the equity owner of that financial asset. So on $1.5 million, let's say your net income, which we don't have to get into the super technical of the EBITDA, which is just a proxy for cash flow. Like, your take home every year is a combination of your salary, whatever perks you're running through the business, and the distributions, right? And if you're solving for that annual max dollar amount, the max K1, you don't have a plan to reinvest those distributions. Like, we only have a few choices every year as business owners. How much do you reinvest? Make sure you pay your taxes. You know, then how much do you reinvest and how much do you take home, right? And if you're gonna reinvest it, hopefully you're creating more value. Otherwise, take it home. Right? I mean, it's just really that simple. And if you don't have a plan on how that investment is going to pay off in the business, then take it home. So it's just a separation to say, hey, you get market comp for being an architect or a designer or project manager or HR, whatever the heck you're doing in the business, you can hire people to do that stuff. You just happen to assume one of those jobs and that's part of your take home at the end of the year. But when you separate that from, okay, what is the value of this and how do I grow this asset? Once you separate those two, your decisions on both become different and you can optimize for different things. But if you're solving for annual or long-term value creation, you then have an idea of what this thing could be worth and how it fits into your long-term plan.
Right. So as an architect owner, right? So we are an architect. We are also a firm owner. So those are two different roles, two different responsibilities, two different businesses, really, right? So what you just said, Ryan, is that as an architect, I'm getting paid as an architect. And then as a business owner, I need to create long-term value in that business. So when the time comes that I need to transition on to the next season in my life, there's something there to transition with, right? That it's not just all about the salary. It's also about this long-term, right? That's basically what you're saying.
It is, Mark. And I think one thing I want to make sure I reiterate for everybody, there's no right or wrong answer. It's just being aware. And let me describe what I mean by that. And I'll even use my company as an example, because in case people are going, well, hey, you're not as familiar with our industry. I have worked in your industry in the past, but how this relates to Arcona and just making a decision is, if you say, Mark, you know what, I got a $1.5 million business between my salary at call it 100, 150, whatever the heck it is, and the additional $150,000 in distributions, I want my X amount, you know, in that example, for what, $300,000-$400,000 lifestyle, save your money. Don't expect the firm to be worth $10 million if you're not optimizing for a valuable asset. There's no wrong decision. It's just a choice.
Right.
But it's like this, I call it purgatory, where people expect to be worth $10 million. They also want the $400,000 in distributions. And they go, why? Why do I have this situation? And so it's just saying, okay, this is a choice. Because, you know, reinvesting for growth is a choice. It's expensive. It's hard. It's, you know, challenging. But the payoff, you know, there's dollars for the payoff. But it's just a choice. And so going back to your point about, like, in just to give Arcona's example, we have, outside of our training and workshops, we have fractional CFO services, hourly rate, right? So I have CFOs and my partner is one of those, of the three that we have. He gets paid to be a CFO, right? But so he has, me and Pat both have guaranteed payments because we're an S corp.
Yeah.
Right? LLC filing is an S corp. We have guaranteed payments. So he doesn't, I'm sure in your industry, it's everywhere in services. You eat what you kill. That's solving for annual income. Versus Pat and I, we have guaranteed payments. And then all the money from training, from strategic planning, from CFO services goes into the company bucket. We have a plan for how we're reinvesting that to productize more things, create more programs, create more training, to create more value, to have more sustainable, predictable, transferable cash flow. It's a plan of ours. Could we both make more annual income right now if we decided not to do that? Absolutely.
Right, right. You could just take it all home and not worry about what happens at the end. And when you're done, you close the doors and you walk away and you take your money and you go do something else with it.
Yeah, and technically, and this is very interesting because it's very similar to architect firms or CPA firms or law firms, that I'm the sales guy, right? And weird, right? You probably haven't noticed that from the conversation. I'm not going in there tearing through people's numbers as the CFO, but as a sales guy, I'm selling to go into the machine, right? If we were eating what we're killing, Pat would be making way more money than me because he's doing the services, right? But like us as a partnership, we're driving this asset forward and we know that he's investing some of the money that he could be in the eat what you kill. He could be making more money than me right now and I wouldn't be part, you know? So you see how this challenge of these different roles, when you're all unified with a big vision, it all makes sense.
Yeah. Let's take a break to thank our sponsors for their support of this episode. Now, you've probably heard of Zaha Hadid Architects. They're one of the world's best known firms. And when it comes to innovation, they're big fans of pushing boundaries. The team at ZHA has started using Twin Motion, a simple real-time ArcViz tool that lets you instantly visualize ideas and clearly communicate them to stakeholders. ZHA designer Marco Marchetta says that the benefits of using TwinMotion for the designers are the simplicity of the interface, the playfulness with which you can articulate your scenes, and not having to worry about all the technical aspects that real-time usually brings, like light maps and PBR workflows or other technical details. Marco also loved TwinMotion Cloud, which lets any member of the team access the project from their web browsers without a single download or installation. The project manager can access the model, review it, and immediately give you feedback anytime from anywhere, says Marco. To download a free trial today, visit our exclusive URL, twinmotion.link/entrearchitect. That's twinmotion.link/entrearchitect to try TwinMotion for free. BIM can be important for your next project, but it's not the only thing you need for your next project. That's why it's important that 95% of manufacturers who offer free BIM files on ARCAT also offer another type of data or information that your project may need. That means 95% of the products with BIM also have CAD files, are in a specification, in a patented spec wizard, or may have product information to help you make the right selection. So stop going to a site with just BIM and go to ARCAT.com. to get everything you need for your next project for free and without registering. No cost, no credit card, no email, it's free. That's ARCAT.com, ARCAT.com. When building a business you're passionate about, it's easy to feel like there aren't enough hours in the day. And if you're doing all the invoicing and accounting on your own, you're probably spending time on work you don't love. FreshBooks is built for business owners like us. It's the all-in-one accounting software that saves entrepreneurs and freelancers up to 11 hours a week. That's 11 hours that you could spend nailing a client pitch, designing your next project, or building your business as an architect. From preparing, sending, and following up on invoices, to tracking and managing expenses, to processing online payments, FreshBooks automates and simplifies all the tough and annoying parts of running your own business. So try FreshBooks for free for 30 days. No credit card required. Go to entrearchitect.com/freshbooks and enter entrearchitect in the How Did You Hear About Us section and get more time back to build the business you love. That's entrearchitect.com/freshbooks. Monograph is building a community of like-minded firm owners and operations leaders who are looking for solutions that align with their firm's values. On top of that, Monograph is building the only cloud-based practice operations software built exclusively for architects by architects. Monograph's easy-to-use and beautifully designed software allows you and your team to know in near real time whether you're on pace to deliver a project on budget. With Monograph, you and your team can plan project schedules, budgets, role assignments, and manage team members all in one place. The best part of Monograph? It doesn't require a degree in finance to use it. To experience the difference today, sign up for a free trial at monograph.com. And to underscore their commitment, on August 12th, Monograph will be hosting their first ever virtual conference. It's called Section Cut. This one-day event brings firm owners, operations leaders, and project leaders together to to learn from success stories and workshops, all with the goal of improving their businesses. Reserve a seat at Section Cut today by visiting sectioncut.com. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Let's talk a little bit about tactics. Let's talk about growing our firm's value. What are the top three things architects need to do to increase the value of their firms? What would you say are those top three things they need to focus on?
Can I provide a little context?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because I'll get into this a minute. If I don't, make sure you drive me back to it. There's this concept of valuation, Mark, that I want to just simplify. Again, people make things more complicated than they need to be. There are two ways to look at value, in our opinion. You have what is called, what we call intrinsic or financial value, which is a value placed on your cash flow based on the risk. This goes for government bonds, public companies, private companies, service companies, SaaS companies. What is the intrinsic risk of that financial asset? So how sustainable, predictable, and transferable it is. They place, you know, a multiple or a discounted cash flow. There's a bunch of technical stuff, but essentially there's a risk associated with, hey, Mark, your cash flow at the end of this year, is it going to be there? Is it going to continue to grow? And how confident are we in that? That's it, right? There's a financial value that, then there's the transaction value, which is the financial value, but then there's a buyer and seller. It's actually when the transaction happens. Could be a family buyout, could be a partnership buyout, could be a private equity, could be anything. They might place a premium on that financial value because of synergies. They might place a discount on it because of family transition, estate planning. It started in reality, right? But like somehow it went up and down. Yeah. So again, all of this is predicated on the risk of your cash flow. We're just now articulating it that way to begin with. And you can measure the financial value of your company and your firm today. And you can project it out. This is what financial buyers do all the time anyways. And ESOPs, and we don't want to get into that, but the reality is that once you say, okay, now we want to focus on de-risking the company by growing a more sustainable, predictable, and transferable cash flow. Inside of that, the company-specific risk of what's going on, there, you know, there's a lot of different systems out there. John Warlow's got the Value Builder system. There's a bunch of different kind of systems out there that are kind of helping address this. Just think about it, Mark, is that these are just all different frameworks to help address the company-specific risk of the cash flow. I don't care what you use. I really don't. Just start identifying this is a thing. How do we de-risk that? So there's one system that we like that's got eight areas as well. People, operations, finance, planning, legal. I mean, it's just very typical, like where a company is like an engine. You need all the components. Without finance, what do you got? Nothing, right? Without sales and marketing, what do you got? Nothing. So essentially what we need to do is anything that makes your cash flow more sustainable, predictable, and transferable applies. You know, so, ERP systems and billing systems or executive team and management leader or clean financials with projections, we could all probably think of a thousand things that are helping systematize your company. Those provide all those things make your company more sustainable and transferable, which enhances the value of the company, and you can track that.
Right. So the sustainability, the predictability, and the transferability of cash flow is what increases value. The more predictable it is, the more sustainable it is, the more easily transferred it is, the more value your business will have.
Period.
Yeah. Right. So by creating systems within each one of those categories of your business, so it becomes more predictable, more transferable, more sustainable, more automated, more delegated, all of the things that make businesses flow and run smoothly adds value to your business.
Absolutely. And I want to go a later deep and just cut me off if you said this is too much. So let's say, you know, there's net income, right? And then if you get to EBITDA, which is just a proxy for cash flow, there's this other thing called normalized EBITDA, which just means like, hey, Mark, if I wanted to buy your business, what do you, what, like, what, if if I were to buy it, what cash flow is available? I don't care what debt structure you've got. I don't care if you're running cars and health insurance, you got your wife on the payroll. I don't care. I want to know what's available for me as the next buyer. That's called the normalization process. So inside of that, it's not just all those funny, goofy perks that we all laugh at as business owners, but it's also, let's say, Mark, you had hired a recruiter that you paid $30,000 in recruiting fees in 2020 to hire your COO to run the firm. You're not going to have to hire a COO every year, right? So right. The $30,000 that you paid for that recruiter is called a normalization. So you add that back to EBITDA, which is what the multiple is applied to. So it's a, if it's four, it's a multiple of four to get to the value, and it's times $500,000 in EBITDA, that's a $2 million business, right? You didn't, by doing that recruiting, you didn't eliminate the value of your business. You actually enhanced that value. You might have gone from a 3.5 multiple to a four, but you reduced your annual income, right? So right. That normalization is like the shifting, like, okay, I'm going to take home less to invest more so I can go from a $1.5 million company to two. You have a reason for that investment to pay off.
Right. So when two things. EBITDA, can you just explain what that is so people who are listening understand what that means? I know it's a proxy for cash flow, but what are the actual
earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization? Right, because depreciation is an accounting thing, right? Yeah. We just need to know how much cash is available for a new buyer. I mean, if you were a C corp, Mark, I don't care. Like, I want to know what, like, it's a, let's make it super easy for everybody. Because in real estate, if I wanted to buy your building or your house, I have zero care how much you owe on it, whether you've got a floating rate or if you've got a fixed rate, if it's 15-year, I don't care. I want your house. Right. Like, and so the house in this example is your cash flow. I want the cash flow, all your complicated stuff. I don't really care about. I just need to know if I were to buy this firm, what's going to continue to be generated and what cash is available for me as a new buyer to reinvest.
Right.
And to be able to make sure that, again, what's the confidence I have it's going to continue.
On a general scale, how does that multiplier get calculated? How do you determine whether it's a 3x or a 5x? How does that work?
Super. We could get way geeky here, but I'll start for what is a multiple. All people are doing, Mark, let's take that four multiple on the $500,000 in EBITDA.
Yep.
And by the way, that net income and that EBITDA example might be lower than the normalized EBITDA. Right. So this is why, again, shift your mindset. Like, we want to know what that normalized EBITDA. So let's say it's $500,000 and it's a four multiple. I'm willing to pay you 4 years of cash flow for your business. If I'm willing to pay you seven, it's because I'm super confident that Mark built one hell of a business. If I'm willing to pay you two, it means you don't have your stuff together. It's just literally, it's just how many years of cash flow are we willing to get? And then there's a lot of complexities of like when and how you get that money. But that's essentially in a nutshell, how many years. What goes into that multiple, Mark? There's called a, and again, I'll do it, but like we don't have to go down this rabbit hole. It's called a discounted cash flow. But there's all this technical stuff that a financial engineer can help you understand. But in that discounted cash flow, they essentially take the risk of your cash flow, how they're essentially doing it, kind of like a cap rate for commercial real estate investing, right? We need to say, okay, if the cap rate's 20%, the asset's risky, right? Yep. If you got a 5% cap rate, Walgreens, CVS, just because everybody knows it's the asset's worth a lot. It's not a great corner, all that stuff. Business is the exact same thing. The higher the the risk factors, the lower the asset's worth. So we want to de-risk it. So essentially that number, the risk, is the inverse of the multiple. So if you have a 20% risk rate, it's a five multiple.
Got it.
And I think the thing that I realized, going back to why this all matters to anybody, because you could be going glossing over. By the way, financial accounting was my worst grade in college. It really was. I was a copier sales guy. I mean, come on.
And ironic, isn't it interesting how life works?
If this is like the Matrix, Mark, if you don't understand this stuff, life's just going to happen to you. And after life happened to me in 2014, I was like, no, thank you. I would like to know how the matrix works.
Right.
So I can control this. And then you can focus on growing more value. Just like in real estate, you're investing in the things that produce a return. Otherwise, take the money home.
Right. Right. And that's what I want to make sure everybody understands, is that essentially it's about cash flow and how predictable, sustainable, and transferable that cash flow can be. And then the whole percentages things and what your firm is actually worth is determined by the market, essentially. It's who, it's what they're, somebody out there is willing to pay for it, and other firms are what they're willing to pay for it, and the risk that's involved in your firm, and how easy is it to transfer and somebody else to slide into your seat and run the business just like you. So the more automated it is, the more predictable it is, the more transferable it is, the more sustainable it is, the more valuable it is.
And I want to, you're spot on. I want to layer back on one of the concepts we were just talking about. Intrinsic financial value versus transaction value. You, because you'd mentioned your firm is worth what someone's willing to pay for it. Okay, so that's kind of in that transaction value. Are we talking about another architect that's going to come in here and pay for it, where they're valuing the payroll as well as the distributions, or is it a financial firm? The transaction value, there's a lot of what ifs, but what's not really up to what ifs is the financial intrinsic value of your company. Every single person listening in right now can go.
That's a calculation.
Yeah, it's literally just a calculation to say, hey, Mark, how risky is your company? Oh, you have no accounting systems. Well, that's going to ding it. So they're going through this to say, in that example we were saying, let's say it's a two multiple and a half million bucks. It's worth $1 million right now. And when I say it's not really up to this, up to argument, is that financial value is what an SBA loan will give a loan at. It's what they underwrite it at. It's what ESOPs value it at. It's what the financial world values it at, which is your baseline. So if you solve for increasing the intrinsic financial value of your firm, you can literally, like, let's say you tried to sell to a third party, but it didn't work out. You can turn around, you can go get an SBA loan. Your other partner could buy you out. A different architect could buy you out. Like, you almost pre-engineered your outcome because you didn't hope that some random third party is going to come and swoop to pay for all your headaches, a lot of money, let you walk away and retire immediately. You're not just hoping. You're literally saying, hey, if that doesn't work out, I absolutely, because the value's there, the SBA will underwrite it and someone else can buy it from me.
So the architecture firm Fairy doesn't exist?
It does, but you got to be really sure that that fairy is going to visit you.
So let's say we've done this, right? We're listening to this podcast and we have built the sustainability, the predictability, and the transferability of the cash flow of our firm. We've done all that. We've got our systems in place and we think our firm's worth, you know, a lot, right? And we have some choices at the end of our careers, right?
And so we all want, right?
Right. And that's the goal, right? Is to have choices, not just, okay, time's up, close the door, everybody's fired.
Or hope the fairy comes out, right?
Right, right. No fairy hasn't come yet, so we're closing. Sorry, everybody loses their job and there's nothing left for retirement. So we did it right, right? And so we have a firm that's working well and it's worth some value. What are our choices at the end? And this is the reason I'm bringing this up, is because we need to make these decisions today on what those choices may be when it's time to move on to the next thing in our life. And so I want to talk about that a little bit. We can't really get too deep into that, but what are the choices that we have when we're ready to move on to the next season of our lives?
Yeah. And I'll give you, so this is, we have five principles of the intentional growth framework. We don't have to get into them right now. And that's all on the website, but the third principle is your exit options. And again, as you've probably seen, I like to take the complex and make it simple. Like, we have to understand common themes between things. So other than saying, hey, by the way, Mark, there's an infinite amount of possibilities, you go, well, that was not helpful. So what we did is we took and we said, okay, out of the whole world of possibilities, what are the five main buckets? And we came up with five main buckets, and this doesn't include IPOs, right? So we're not helping people that are VC led that are going to IPOs or SPACs or that crap. This is like normal world stuff. So, and we categorize these, and like, they have, each of these exit options have different attributes and they're different. So you can say, okay, out of these five buckets, what are the differences between them and how they impact what I want, my financial targets, etc. But the first one is internal. And the subcategories of that could be family, partnership buyouts. It could be, I mean, whatever combination of internal buyouts there are. The second one is what we call acquisition entrepreneur. A friend of mine wrote the book, Buy Then Build. There's a lot of hype out there about called search funds. Think about it as another architect that's going to come in with some money, either an SBA loan or some backing money backing them. And there's financial investors that are backing the horse, right? That horse is going to be a new CEO or new architect that's going to buy your firm.
The architecture fairy.
Potentially, yeah. Like the fairy with a big pot of gold.
Right.
the third bucket is what we call ESOPs, employee stock ownership plans. And the ESOP is a whole long discussion, but you get to a certain size and that's a super interesting option. And then the fourth bucket is private equity. Think financial buyers, right? So there's a pool of money. They go to buy a company to provide an internal rate of return. Private equity, the subcategories of that could be family offices. There's like a lot of different versions of private equity, but there's, you know, kind of the main category. The fifth bucket is strategic buyers, another architect firm, right? Or someone that's up and down the supply chain or whatever it might be. And yes, there's a lot of combinations, but these five are just kind of like, hey, like I can, these four don't make sense. I'm probably going to focus on this. And how this relates to what is controllable for everybody that's listening in is internal acquisition entrepreneur ESOP and private equity are all going to start and value everything based on the financial intrinsic value. The strategic buyer, the fifth bucket, Mark, is the fairy that everybody thinks is going to swoop in and they do no planning and they hope that this is going to happen. Where the, if you focus on just the financial value, your options are pretty endless. I mean, again, there's a lot of things you could be driving towards, but the whole point is to have some intentional focus of what is going to meet most of your goals.
So Ryan, before we wrap up, this has been super interesting. I think that architects, you know, we don't think like this, right? And it's hard to think like this. So first of all, if you are still struggling with the concepts that we talked about today, go to arkona.io. It's arkona.io. There's a blog. Ryan has a podcast called Intentional Growth. You can search for that. There's a whole series of guides over there that will help you. And Ryan's there. Just you can connect with him and talk to him and ask some questions. So go over there. Ryan, before we wrap up, what is one thing that an architect can do today, like right now, to build a better business for tomorrow? What's the one thing that they need to take away from this episode that they should be doing today?
Do you want to solve for annual income or create a more valuable business? Like it's a choice, and that one choice that you, and there's no right or wrong answer. That one choice will make everything else so much easier, Mark, because if you're sitting in a peer group with a bunch of architects and they're saying, grow, grow, grow. And you're like, hey man, or everybody, that's not my goal. My goal is to take as much home as possible and have a lot of fun and enjoy what I'm doing. You just, it makes all the decisions become easier if you know what you're trying to focus on.
So make a decision. And then once you make that decision, then you can start planning for what the end is going to look like, right? And walking away from it is okay if that's what you chose to do and that's what you had planned to do.
Yeah, being intentional.
His name is Ryan Tansom, T-A-N-S-O-M. The website is arkona.io, arkona.io. Again, there's a blog, Intentional Growth Podcast, bunch of guides over there. You can connect with Ryan. Ryan, what's the best way for people to connect with you on social media anywhere or just go
LinkedIn.
To the website?
LinkedIn. Yep.
Okay. Ryan, thank you. I appreciate you for coming here, talking about a complicated subject that many of us sort of glaze over. But it's important. We all know that we need to know this stuff. And so that's why I like bringing people like you onto the show so we can sort of demystify all of this, understand the concepts. And I appreciate you for that. I appreciate you for coming and sharing your knowledge at Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, thanks so much. It's been fun being on the other side.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, and share a link to this episode with a friend. Links to all the resources we discussed today are available at the show notes for this episode found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. And thank you to RCAT, Studio Services Bookkeeping, FreshBooks, and Twinmotion for their support of this podcast. Entree Architect is proud to be a partner with the largest, most engaged AEC multimedia network on the planet, Gable Media. We're curating thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GableMedia.com. And check out Entree Architect Academy membership. Ready to edit business resources, live monthly training for architects, business training that is, a supportive architect community, yep, it's there, and Simple Systems, our new business system program developed for small firm entrepreneur architects just like you. It's in there for you at Entree Architect Academy. It's waiting for you right there at the membership. Come join me and hundreds of your entrepreneur architect friends. Visit entrearchitect.com/join to enroll today. Be well, my friends. Be healthy, happy, safe, and secure. Thank you for listening today. Love, learn, and share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short haul, frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.